East Coast, how are we?
Come on.
I'm not saying anything.
Why not?
You keep talking over me. Then you're just going to edit me out of the whole thing. You're just going to delete my whole sound.
Yeah. Come on. You deserve it. You know you deserve it.
Can you delete most of me? the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah.
With the guy with the eraser. Just can you erase me?
Yeah. It comes across the screen and just takes them all out.
Daffy's head is gone. Yeah.
He turns his head into a flower.
That's what we need. We need that, except with our voices.
Puts a plunger on his butt for a tail. Yes. Yeah.
Hey, you! And he can't talk back because his mouth is gone.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I could just throw him into the green room, though.
That's true. It's kind of the same thing.
It is.
Well, we are back, so we should get this show on the proverbial podcast road, I'd say.
This is a one show, one drink, right?
It is a one show, one drink, yes.
All right, should I roll it?
Roll it!
All right, and
welcome to One Show, One Drink, part of the What We Watch When We Drink podcast from the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network, where we take one show or film and pair it with one boozy beverage. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We're back.
We are back. Hey, I have a question. This is not for podcast talk. This is really more for visual live streaming talk. That video that you've produced so well,
Thank you.
The very beginning with the Booze Dancing logo, there's a bar.
Yes.
In the background. Where is that bar?
The bar is actually in Madison, Wisconsin.
Madison, Wisconsin. Home of?
Rob Gard,
our friend.
Whiskey Guy Rob.
Newly married Whiskey Guy Rob.
I know. I actually did go into that bar.
Just a nice little bar with whiskey.
I into that bar. There was a guy.
There always is a guy.
There's a guy who was an artist. I believe he would go by the name Pastrami Basket.
Well, of course he did. I was going to say that. Pastrami Basket. The clue is Pastrami Basket.
No, seriously. I don't know if he still does it anymore, but he was an artist. He did some pretty weird stuff. Nice guy. And he did the, I was going back and forth with him. I said, could you do the logo for us? And he did. So we drew it up. He did the thing, the little cardboard cutout thing, you know, with the little dancing booze. And it's just the booze dancing over the top, placed it on the bar, took the photo, sent it to me. And that's where it came up. So
there you go. This would be a, go ahead.
I remember years ago, I'd gone back and forth with this guy. We were going to do, I think, a whole bunch of different stuff with different whiskeys based on like movies, whether it was like The Godfather or all this weird stuff. It never materialized. But anyway. Pastrami Basket is the
Pastrami
artist.
Pastrami Basket. A little bit of a backstory to the booze dancing history right there. That's nice. Very nice. Well, we are back together again on the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. This is One Show, One Drink, where we take one show or movie and we pair it with one sort of adult beverage and we talk about both and we drink the latter.
So the film is Mildred Pierce.
Mildred Pierce. Now, I bet you most of our listening audience don't know Mildred Pierce. Maybe they know the newer version.
The miniseries.
But the original is kind of a classic movie.
So first time I saw this, I was back in college. And I took a series of film classes just for fun. And one of them was a film noir class. And Mildred Pierce was one of the films we saw. And I really liked it. I thought it was really good. I mean, you know, well, we can talk about it. But that's when I saw it. I was scrolling through, you know, future sponsor HBO Max, which will soon be rebranded as Max. Think of us, please. Time Warner. No, I'm sorry. Discovery Plus.
Discovery. Whatever they are.
Discovery. Yeah. Whoever you guys are.
Whoever you are.
Remember us.
Remember us.
We're big fans.
We'll even change our name to Booze Max TV or something.
Sure. Max Booze.
Booze Max Booze. Max Booze. Because that's us.
We're Max Booze. So anyway, I'm scrolling through the movies and I saw this and I said, hey, let's do this. So
beautiful. Okay. Black and white, old movie, Joan Crawford. We're going to dig into it shortly.
1945.
If the math machine is working right, that's about a 78 years ago or so.
It's just a little older than you.
just a little older than me. I actually saw it a few years when they brought it back out a couple years later.
Uh-huh. After the first movie houses.
It was a nickel.
It was a nickel.
I spent my whole day there after I walked through the snow.
You watched the newsreels?
Watched the newsreels. We saw what was going on in Europe.
Three Stooges movies?
We saw the shorts, yes. And newsreels. Steamboat Willie.
Ah, Steamboat Willie.
Yes, yes. Okay, let's go out for some popcorn.
Okay, jazz hands.
Jazz hands, woo!
Jazz hands.
All right, and these jazz hands are empty. You know what it needs?
We need a drink.
It's a drink. So we are going to drink.
I was thinking medication, but sure.
Well, that's what the drink is. Steadies the nerves.
till the nurse comes.
Till the nurse comes in, yes. That's right. We're on a schedule. Lithium, please. Can I get a double lithium?
Do you get a sponge bath?
I'd love one. Thank you. All right. So tonight we are the dram of the night is courtesy of me, but via a friend of the podcast, Raj Sabarwal, and his company. And this is from his Dram Hunter series. It is a 1987 Invergordon single cask. So that's 34-year-old single cask in his rare cask series. And it's bottle 152 bottles. And it is, I don't even see the ABV on this thing. It's here 50%. Somewhere. 50%. Okay. I'll take your word for it. So there you go. This is a grain whiskey, right? You guys probably know more about this than I do.
Shall I read a little bit about it?
Go ahead.
Okay. So Dram Hunter Whiskey 359, the Invergordon 34-year-old, part of the rare cask series. So we were excited to discover this cask because most Invergordon is used for the White and Mackay blends, so single casks are rare. Invergordon, located in the Northern Highlands, is the most northerly grain whiskey distillery in Scotland. The water is sourced at near Loch Glass, so it's near to our hearts then. This whiskey was produced using a coffee still versus traditional pot stills when malt is involved. So for those with open minds, you are about to savor something very special indeed. Enjoy.
Well, we know our friend Raj has a very magnificent palate.
Yes. Raj don't play, man.
He pointed me to this one a couple years ago, and he's a smart man.
Yes, he is.
We were putting some noses in this thing?
Well, wait, we didn't cheers, man.
Oh, we got to do it. Oh, I didn't. That's
you
true.
Are so rude.
I'm so rude. I was just nosing. Leave me alone.
Jesus.
All right. Uno, dos, trois.
Cheers. What the hell are you doing?
Plastic?
What are you doing?
It sure sounds plastic, doesn't it?
What'd you get? Did you get the polystyrene Glencairns off of this one?
Yeah, you drinking out of a red Solo cup? What is that?
Jesus.
That was weird. My Mexican Coke bottle is stronger. So what do you guys know about grain whiskeys?
Not a whole lot. This is the, what is it? It's like the ketchup of blends. It kind of just brings it all together.
So it's good. I can tell you that much.
What, you tasted it already?
I went in.
The nose is kind of mellow.
It's very fruity though. Like I'm getting like a plum or like a prune.
It's really, but everything's really subtle.
Yeah, it's very soft. It's not like super strong in the nose.
No, and I mean, that's kind of
the way grain is. What's the other one? There's another grain distillery. What's the one Diageo ones? There's Invergordon and there's
Cameron Bridge.
Cameron Bridge, yeah, maybe, Bridge. But there's another one though. I can't think of the name of it.
There's
whatever. Doesn't matter.
There's not that many, right?
No, I don't think so. I think they're like huge industrial processes, right?
Not anymore. Yeah, everybody used to have their own, and I think they shut it all down, and big brands have one.
So there's Strathclyde, North British,
North
Cameron Bridge, the Singleton Distillery. That's the only ones that are listed here, but maybe they're the only ones that pay Google to, you know, show up on the map.
Which one's the Diageo one?
There's Cameron Bridge.
That's Diageo's?
Yeah, that's what it says here, Diageo Cameron Bridge. I don't know. I think do they own North British also?
I think they do.
North British, I think I've had maybe once back in the day. But I think I've had a few of the Invergordons. They make it out quite a bit as single cask.
And the Society's had a couple of Invergordons that I've gotten.
Invergordon's kind of new, 1960.
Really?
Not very old.
And yet, this stuff is 34 years old. So, okay. Did you go in for a taste yet?
I did.
I actually did a little bit, just a little bit.
I did.
You said it was 50%, right?
That's what it says. Hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like plummy and like, that's good. That's nice.
not a lot of heat.
No,
and
it's on
the sweet side.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say it's sweet. Like, it's not like, you know, my teeth.
No, I mean, as opposed to like peppery or cinnamon or something.
Right.
No, I think the sweetness is pretty strong.
Yeah, it's
more sweet. But then it builds. Yeah. Like, you get like a lot of baking spice and all that stuff coming up.
The second taste is a lot of building. It's really layered.
And it's a pretty good finish. Not the heat, but just a flavor.
It's not a long finish.
No.
But it's nice. It's warm. It's inviting. You know, it's like a down comforter. You just want to get under and put your head on a pillow and take a little snooze.
I want to do that most nights, actually. Did you say that you don't, I think we know that, but didn't Raj on his website say that there's not a lot of single casks of grain whiskeys in general?
It doesn't sound like it. Let me see. They were excited. I was going to open mine.
Or River Gordon's.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to guess they probably don't spend a lot of time.
Oh, okay. It looks like the majority of it goes into the blends.
Yeah. So they don't
release a lot.
Yeah.
But so now it sort of feels like that it's because it's a strange little category and whiskey nerds like these strange little categories. So now you do see single casks of these things. So maybe the producers and the ownership groups are, hey, we don't need all 4 billion barrels. Let's sell off some of these things to some private folks.
Yeah. Hey, so you know what? Here's the question. So, all right, it says it's a grain whiskey, so that means it's not malt.
Right.
So what grain is it? It could be anything?
I think it's mostly wheat.
Oh, right? Okay. I wasn't sure if they use like wheat or corn or rye. I don't know. I mean, I guess it could be any of those, right?
Right.
As long as it's a grain whiskey. It's basically saying it's not malt. It's just
seconded boxes of Captain Crunch that they then run back through the process.
I should say it's not barley.
Right. It's wheat, corn, and they're unmalted. You could have rye, I suppose,
I don't see why not.
Right? Yeah.
But they don't tell you what it is. So
no. Okay.
All right. Yeah, it's good. I like it. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, it's easy drinking.
Have you had a lot of this Dram Hunter stuff?
I've had a few. This one, I've only had a little bit of this bottle, but I think I have a couple other ones from Raj.
Ooh, he's got a 32-year-old Macallan. I'm looking on a
That would be a real good one.
That'd be interesting, yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge Macallan fan, but I've had a couple lately, and I'm kind of warming back up to it a little bit. So I think I was maybe confusing the Macallan with Dalmore, which I typically don't like.
Yeah, too much sherry.
It just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah.
So... But Macallan, yeah, Macallan's all right.
This will be fun to come back to later on.
Mm, definitely.
I just took a quick look, and it looks like Henry Gordon uses wheat and corn.
Oh, okay.
Wheat and corn. Okay.
If this is like a blended batch of that, or if one's this is
yeah, so it doesn't have to be corn. Like a single grain. It's just saying that
correct.
Again, there's no malt.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. It's going to be the bulk of something else, you know, of some other bigger brand of something. Okay, let's go back about 80 years to Mildred Pierce. And you got a little bit of a synopsis of this one?
Yeah, there's a little plot summary that I did the old cutty pasty.
Here, let me just stop and say, I thought it would be funnier. I don't know why.
Actually, you know what?
I thought it was
I thought there funny. Was a lot of funny stuff.
Yes, I agree.
I watched it again. There's a lot of good lines.
I thought this was the next Duck Soup. I thought black and white, it's got to be the Marx Brothers. I didn't see them anywhere in this. I don't know.
Yeah, where's the mirror scene?
continue.
Okay, so a brief plot summary. When Mildred Pierce's out-of-work husband leaves her for another woman, Mrs. Biederhoff, Mildred decides to raise her 2 daughters on her own. Despite Mildred's financial successes in the restaurant business, her oldest daughter, Vita, resents her mother for degrading their social status. In the midst of a police investigation after the death of her second husband, Mildred must evaluate her own freedom and her complicated relationship with her daughter.
There you go. Wow. So where do you start with this guy or lady? So I guess we start with maybe the book. It's based on a book.
Yes.
And
book by James M. Cain.
Right. And Joan Crawford at the time is, I think, not totally well known. She's a an actress in the studio system. And I think one of you guys said this earlier, I think before we came on, that she was not the first choice for this movie, I believe.
I don't remember saying that, but okay.
And it put her kind of on the map, I'd say, right? Did she win an Oscar? She was nominated for an Oscar.
This was her first movie after leaving the MGM studio system. Right. So this is her first Warner Brothers movie. She was a pretty big star for MGM.
Was she?
Okay. As a box office draw through the 30s. And then this is the first big thing she's in the 40s, you know, the groundswell. Through the 30s, she was pretty high. At the end of the 30s, early 40s, nothing. And now it's 45, and she's kind of coming back on top. And this is her first Academy Award nomination and her only win.
There you go. Yep. I'm not sure where it is in the pantheon of movies, but it's relatively famous, right? I mean, it speaks of Joan Crawford's future, her own mothering tactics, maybe.
Right. Supposedly. Yeah,
we'll find out about that
later. You mean Mommy Dearest?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Her daughter wrote that book, right?
Her daughter wrote that book, right.
Okay.
This is a classic 1940s of the era, noir. The acting is very different than we're used to today.
Oh, my God, yes.
Dialogue is very different than it is today in movie writing. And it's got humor. It's got darkness. It's got some evil. It's got some overly dramatic scenes. It's got some kind of fun, wacky scenes, too. There's a lot going on in this movie, and Joan Crawford is amazing in it. She runs that whole show. That whole movie is her. Although the supporting cast is pretty great, including her daughter, who Anne Blythe, who becomes her own level of stardom in her own life later on.
And she's still alive.
She is still. She's one of the last of that era.
When Angela Lansbury passed away, she now is the oldest person. Angela Lansbury had been nominated in 1944. She was nominated in 1945. So she's the oldest person to be nominated who's still alive.
That's great. Oh, Anne Blythe. Yeah. Very, very beautiful woman herself. And Joan Crawford was a knockout in her own right. So, and give us we talked a little bit about the synopsis. This one goes all over the place. And I love the way it starts.
Yeah, it's great.
It starts at the end, and then the story is told first-person account from Joan Crawford. And then we go backwards in time, and you see how she gets to where she is that the night of this murder of her husband.
She goes back to the beginning, right, Vizzini?
To the beginning, where she is just a homemaker who is her husband is, we don't know what he does, her first husband.
Oh, he was in real estate.
Was he in real estate? He was in real estate with a friend. Then he loses his job, and she's almost the breadwinner for a short amount of time. And she has these two daughters, one teen and one youngster, who she's trying to get them to have lives that, unlike her own upbringing, Joan Crawford's. So she's baking and cooking at home and selling cakes and baked goods.
She's got a side hustle.
She got a side hustle, right? She can't Uber. She
can't DoorDash.
So she is cooking at home, which is kind of, that's a thing now, right? Home cooking, and then you sell it, right? And her husband and her kind of get into it, and he leaves. So she is left to fend for herself, single mom, and take care of these girls, and she has really got a connection with the older daughter, and she wants her to have all the fancy niceties of someone above her station in life, ballet classes and polo ponies and piano lessons and everything.
Singing and everything else, yeah.
And then the poor little Tom girl daughter, she can't just like go play ball with the boys.
No, right.
You know, mom's giving her ballet lessons and all that good stuff.
And she's too busy. Mom, Joan Crawford, is too busy for men. She's got to make money. And she's sort of, without her kids knowing, she takes a job as being a waitress at sort of a small little restaurant in town.
Like a diner.
Yeah. And before you know it, she has got an idea to start her own restaurant because she can cook. And with the help of her husband's former partner,
Wally.
Wally Fay, played by
Jack Carson.
He was in a lot of 1950s TV.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was the other guy in all those.
I could see him being like in, you know, like
Sergeant Bilko.
Well, like Father Knows Best, being like the buddy down the street.
Yes, exactly. This is him. Correct. That is right. That is right.
He's like the what was the one kid? What was the bad? Not the bad kid, but he could be like the Eddie Haskell.
Eddie Haskell.
Dad.
Correct.
He could be like the dad version of an Eddie Haskell type.
Correct. That would be a perfect description of the.
He's a little handsy too.
Chad Carson. He does like the ladies.
He's very handsy.
He's very handsy.
He's very forward. He ain't shy.
Nope. If you looked at his IMDb, it is a long list.
That's what they did, right? They were all working actors.
But, you know, they were all in the studio system, and they all just had this, you know, hey, we need a guy who's tall and blonde. Let's go, you.
Well, it's like England now, right? Where all these guys are working. There's always working. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. And it's we need you for 3 days. Yeah. Go over there, work for 3 days, come back.
Right. You know. Yes.
Take a role. Journeyman.
A little aside here, his first movie is in 1937. A movie he's attending at a gas station, uncredited. Okay. 1937. Wow. He must have 100 movies, maybe a little less than 100 movies, before he gets to Mildred Pierce, which is 1945. Okay. I swear there may be 100 movies in here before he gets to 8 years later. He's in Mildred Pierce. He's in all kinds of movies with big names after that. Into the 60s. So anyway, he's in the Cat on a Hot.
Yeah, I know. I just saw that. Yeah. Right. He died young though.
Magnificent Roughnecks too.
He died really young.
Yeah. A Star Is Born.
And the guy that plays the husband, Bruce Bennett, his real name is Herman Brix. And he won the 1928 silver medal.
Yes. That's all that.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. Another guy with a huge lung.
And he got seen and was one of the Tarzan serials.
Huh. He's a regular Johnny Weissmuller.
Johnny Weissmuller was the first guy. He was the second guy.
Okay.
Where you're like, wow, this guy was in everything through the 30s with these serials.
He was a little wooden. I didn't care for him.
So with the help of our friend here, Mr. Fay, Mildred starts her own restaurant. And and she gets the property, the place, through a kind of a sleazy guy.
Monty Barragán.
Monty Barragán from an old Pasadena rich, old money family who has his eyes on Mildred as well. And so she, without telling her daughters that she is doing this, I guess that's true, right? Later on, they find out that she's now a restaurateur and becoming very successful and keeping her kids well-dressed and fed. And becoming very successful, she opens, four or five different restaurants.
Yeah.
And she's Mildred's. Just really... Mildred's, right? Very, very popular.
Catchy
and
name.
Not really.
Mr. Scott is... not Mr. Scott. Zachary Scott. Monty? Monty is all over her like a cheap suit. And which is the kind of line you hear in this kind of movie. And... quite often.
Like white on rice?
Like what? Well, you wouldn't hear that in this movie, but maybe you would. Well, maybe you would. I don't know.
Like gravy on my turkey special?
There you go. That's it.
How about that?
So,
what? Why are you shaking your head? Why are you shaking your head?
Because he's got Parkinson's disease.
Why? What's wrong with you? Drink the whiskey. Steady your nerves, son.
And
this is my shooting hand.
See this? Steady as a rock.
This is my shooting hand.
Different movie.
Sorry. I'm a Cincinnati kid.
Poor Monty comes into later in this her career arc, in Mildred's career arc. Monty has some financial issues with his wealth, and kind of forces the issue for her to sell out to him. The only way she can get out of that is to marry him. Am I telling that right?
Well, the whole thing was that the daughter was kind of estranged, right? Because she didn't want to be with mom, the lowly, you know, restaurateur. Well, we smell the grease and working in the kitchens. So, you know, the only way to get to a nice piece of property was to go through Monty to get one of the family estates. And doesn't he say, well, why don't we get married? Or she offers to marry him, right? But the only way he'll marry her is if she gives up 30% of the company.
So then she has this big house.
But again, it was all for Vita.
All for her daughter, Vita, and
life. It was all for Vita.
Because she has left and she's a kind of a bitchy little girl. And who's had everything, but she doesn't. But what she really wants is
spoiled, rotten
brat, right? And Mildred will do anything for her, and does.
Even though she's been warned by everybody, but how's she spoiling these kids?
She's been warned. Yes, she has.
You know, that was one of the big reasons why she got divorced, right? A, because dad lost his job and wasn't making any money, and B, because, you know, she kept overindulging her kids and dad didn't like it. And he wasn't wrong.
And the one line is, Vade has convinced me alligators have it right. They eat their young.
Yep. Yeah, the kid, Vita was quite the character, though, man. She was ruthless.
Would have been better.
Ruthless. What'd she say? Oh, there was. Do you remember the one part where she's like tucking her in and like giving her a hug and I love you, mommy? And she's like trying to give her a kiss. She's like, Mom, don't get sticky about it. Don't get sticky about it. Like, okay. All right. Great. I love you. Bye. Go away. See ya.
She's a treat.
Oh, my God. What a joy. What a joy.
You mentioned our alligators, and it's hard not to think of alligators in that line without thinking of the great Eve Arden.
Oh, she's spectacular. I think she steals the show.
Yeah. She does. She's great. She hires Mildred to work in her restaurant. I don't know if it's her restaurant.
That's kind of got her started,
and
that's, right?
Gets her started because she went in actually just to get a cup of tea, and she walks out of there having a job working in the kitchen or working as a waitress.
And then she repays the favor by bringing her to Mildred's. And she runs the show at Mildred's.
General manager kind of thing. Yeah. And she is great. She's her secondhand man. She does everything for Mildred. And Eve Arden, for those a little bit younger than us, was a great character actress, comedian in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. She ultimately starred in maybe her most... Well, I think she was on Laugh-In for a while or guest on Laugh-In. She got into a sitcom with Kay Ballard called The Mothers-in-Law, which was kind of a Lucy and Ethel knockoff because it was from the Desilu Studios with Desi Arnaz and a 3 or 4 year run, I think, on CBS.
And before that, she was in, through the 50s, she was one of the first big female stars with Armis Brooks.
She
was in it through the 50s and then transitioned into The Mothers-in-Law and, you know, everything else that happened after that.
How old are you two again?
We are old, yes.
And then she wound up being the principal in the movie Grease.
That's right. Yeah. So. She's just funny, acerbic. I think of her as the predecessor to B. Arthur.
Oh, yeah. The one-liner that could kill.
Yeah. Kind of a brusque woman, very self-deprecating, and won't back down and will fight it off with the guys and never can get the guy, right?
She's got some great lines.
She is so funny. And the lines in the movie we talked about, it's film noir. It's a crime drama, but she's the comedy of the whole thing. And she's absolutely so funny. You got a couple lines from her there, Ange?
Here was one. It was, when men get around me, they get allergic to wedding rings. And she's like, oh, because Mildred goes away for a little while, goes on like a little road trip.
Mexico, you know, right.
Yeah. So she's like, I like Mexico. It's so Mexican. It's just so funny. She's just her whole personality was just great.
The accountant is trying to run the books with Mildred. She comes in, Ida comes in to distract Mildred and take her away. And the accountant says, you always do that. And she says, I want to get you alone. And then she goes, I'm a rrr.
That was great. And Wally's really good, too. He's funny.
He has great lines. Yeah. He's a lecherous con man, and he was...
I don't think he was a con man.
He was a little... had some questionable business.
A little slimy businessman. Yeah.
A little slimy, yeah.
The whole initial thing that he helps her with is to get the property for the restaurant. And he does it in such a way that he basically screws the owner out of everything.
Right.
He says, you're not going to put any money down in a year you own the place. He's like, you know, this guy gets nothing.
Right.
We're cutting him out.
He's so smart, it's a disease. Yeah. What does that mean? Like, I don't understand. Like, what does that mean?
He's really smart. It's like a disease. He's a little bit lecherous. He's a little bit handsy.
He likes what he likes.
He's had his eye on Mildred since they were kids, I think he says at one point. And, you know, she's the apple that got away. And now that her X is gone, he still is. Oh, hey now, let's see what's going on here, kid.
The thing that you kind of miss, though, is that he is the husband's business partner,
right?
And basically fires the husband and then goes after the wife. Like, Okay, there's no redeeming quality there. There just isn't. Like, you fired the husband to get him out of the way. This is terrible.
Yeah. And the husband is sort of this, I don't know, what, milquetoasty kind of guy. Yeah. And he's kind of boring. And, you know, of course, he's down on his luck. He loses his job. And he doesn't fight real hard to stay in the family.
Well, he says, you know, I thought you'd have to come back to me.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. At the very end, he's the stand-up guy. When the murder mystery ensues, he says he did it.
Yeah. He
he's too busy playing cards with Mrs. Peterhoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mrs. Peterhoff was on the phone.
All about.
I don't know.
Yes. She's a woman, huh? Mrs. Never has a first name.
Her first name is Maggie.
Does she have a first name?
In the credits.
Is it Maggie?
Maggie. Yes.
Maggie. Mrs. It's always Mrs. So should we finish the storyline or kind of break up here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Mildred becomes very successful and ultimately has to sell out to Monty. Mm-hmm. And she finds out that her daughter, who's been very chummy with Monty, have a little thing. Now, this is after she finds out that she's basically broke because she's been covering Monty's lifestyle and her kids' lifestyles. And so she has to sell the restaurant, but she's going bankrupt. And she comes home to this. Oh, she goes to the beach house of Monty's.
By the way,
Malibu,
real location,
and knocked down during some storms a number of years ago.
Yeah, not that long ago.
I think it was used for various movie shoots.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I was going through it, looking at some of the trivia, like filming locations, there were actually some scenes shot on location. So Malibu, yeah. Glendale, L.A., but then a lot of stuff was done in the studio in Burbank.
Yep. So then she comes home, Mildred. To the beach house, and she has a gun with her, and she's planning to take out Monty and herself. And then she gets to the beach house, and she sees her daughter canoodling, getting fresh with Monty. And then what happens?
She professes her love to Monty. Monty kicks her to the curb. Vita gets the gun, and bang, bang, bang. Monty gets 86th. As they say in the restaurant business.
Now we're at the beginning of the, where the movie started. We're in the beach house and we see Monty shot. We don't know who shoots him. And Mildred runs, gets out of the town, gets out, and she gets brought in by the police, right? And police take her in. And so now we're caught up to speed. And now it's finding out who really did it. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's the daughter. And... it's a very sad story, actually, at the end.
Yeah,
it is. And it kind of ends kind of abruptly.
What was interesting at the end is the detective has Mildred there, and the daughter comes in, and the detective lies and says, your mother's told us everything, and the girl then confesses. And this movie predates the Miranda rights by 25 years. So there were no rights. You can incriminate yourself all the way to the electric chair.
If you want, we're going to say whatever we want.
So it was interesting how that played out. You're like, what? Say something to the police? We never say anything to the police. I want a lawyer. Sorry, this is before that.
Where's my 10 cents to make a phone call? Policing was a little bit different then. And I love the way the head detective or head of the police station runs the investigation, the way he questions. He's sort of like an attorney, or he's sort of like a college professor. You know, he's almost British in the way his affectation, his voice, and I don't know, he's so kind and gentle, and then he kind of catches her up in all the lies and figures it all out. But it's not like a regular, not what we think of in terms of a TV detective.
And what was interesting is he has her in the middle of the room, and then you see her manager Ida get taken into one room, not with her, discusses something and leaves. And you see Wally get taken into a room, discusses something, and leaves. And it's one of these, like, you're sitting there spinning your story about whatever happened, and they already know everything now. And you're just lying at this point, and they know it's a lie. And they know why you're lying, but they know it's a lie.
We didn't talk about Anne Blythe. She was really, really a famous actress and singer for years. She was in all kinds of movies. Huh. Her career throughout TV and theater is just magnificent. She was in TV. She was in Kismet, the Buster Keaton story. All kinds of TV shows. Wagon Train, Dick Powell Show, Twilight Zone, Quincy, Murder, She Wrote. She was in a TV movie called The Citadel. which is a movie now, a show coming out on Amazon.
Oh.
That I heard a $300 million boondoggle that that Amazon's paid for. That sounds like it's not.
I heard it was not very good.
And they're trying to make it like a big spy series, like, you know, MCU kind of thing. I love the era. I'm really happy you picked this.
Well, I'm a sucker for anything crime, anything like film noir-ish, and anything like L.A. in like the 40s and 50s, all over it.
Yeah.
It's the clothes and the car and the dialogue everything. Else. It's like L.A. It's, Confidential, but actually at the right point in time when they made it, not made.
Right. Yes. Right. Or well, the letter of Perry Mason, because this is 1945. Yeah. So I think this was made maybe like right around the war. They actually held it back till after the war was over. According to some of the trivia, this movie made like half the profits for Warner Brothers that year.
It made $5.5 million.
That's huge back then.
That's huge back in the 40s.
That's a lot of nickels.
Tons.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's a lot of nickels at the Nickelodeon.
$5 million. Yeah.
That's right. The photography, the lighting, it's just beautifully done.
It's the mood. It just sets the whole ambiance, the whole thing.
The lighter thing that they did several times, where they pull like a madcap and it lights and they're lighting cigarettes for everybody. Just the way the panache, where you just take it out like it's a matter of fact thing.
There was a lighting of a cigarette scene. It was two cigarettes. And I think Joan Crawford is sitting and the person lighting the cigarette is behind her, comes around and she turns. I swear I thought her hair was going to get caught on fire from this match. And just so well done. I mean, who knows how many takes to do some of this stuff.
And how many wigs they went through, because her hair did catch on fire.
So. And how many wigs they went through. It's weird to say that a black and white film is beautifully shot, but it's beautifully shot.
Why is it weird?
I don't know. I think color, I don't know. Color seems to have the word beautiful in front of it. Beautiful color film. But this is...
I like a well-done black and white movie. I think it's kind of cool.
I do too. I just don't know that I say beautiful. It's just so...
It's just different. It's
dramatic.
Just, it's got a dark. You know, it's got a different like tone to it. It almost sets the mood automatically. You know, like the back half of the last season of Better Call Saul, where they went black and white. You know, it just changed the whole tone of the show. It was just really cool.
And it has, of course, it has that old movie feel, because it's an old movie. Right. I think you said to me, it's a little bit jarring.
It's when very you're jarring at first. Because it's so cheesy.
The pacing is, well, yeah, you're right.
It's like stagey.
We think it's cheesy.
It's more.
It's stagey because that's the way acting was.
At the most time. Of these guys were all probably doing like plays.
You filmed a play is basically what it was.
Filming a play, or you came from a radio show where you just read a script.
Right.
And now you're having to do this in front of a camera. And that was the style. That was just the style. They weren't trying to be what we consider cheesy. That's just the way they were. And there is a real beautifulness to it that we've lost so much, because now everything is, it's just like real life. Everything's like real life now. It's
sort.
Right?
Now it's sort.
Sort of.
It's a more naturalistic approach. How about that?
Yeah. This was still, the movie business is only what, 30 years old maybe. Or so at this time.
And talkies were only, 10, 15 years?
20 years
maybe?
Old? About, right? So you've got to entertain these folks that are paying a nickel to get into the theater, right? Hollywood's kind of a new thing, and celebrity's kind of a new thing. And pretty much anything you do probably in front of a camera, people would buy for a nickel. Mm-hmm. People were starved for entertainment after the war.
No TV,
just radio still. So, although TV's coming pretty quick here. And to find those movies of that era that still hold up and still are captivating and you want to still watch, I think it's pretty special.
And it was a good enough story that they just redid it and made it a miniseries. I mean, it's the sort of thing where people carry that on and go, well, let's do it again.
The beauty of our future sponsor, Max, I think they own the Warner Brothers catalog. And a lot of these movies were on the Warner Brothers. Yeah. You know, they were pretty big with the film noir and this look. Like MGM was more like musicals.
Yeah.
Each studio had their thing. And I think Warner Brothers was more, you know, the crime and all that kind of stuff, which is the stuff that I really like enjoy. So.
Well, it's hard to not, we're here. We might as well say it. Christina Crawford wrote a book, in the 70s, I think.
About her mother. Yeah. Mommy Dearest.
Yeah. Mommy Dearest. And about the poor relationship abusive relationship with her mom. And she told the whole story about how tough her growing up with Joan Crawford. And I think that it came out after Joan Crawford died. I think Joan Crawford died in the late 70s, and I think the book came out slightly after that. And that was the whole thing. It became a, and that was became a movie on its own. And I think Faye Dunaway, right? She plays Joan Crawford in the movie. So Joan Crawford had this really weird career, although the drama of her career is kind of after her life, because the story comes out when she's gone.
Yeah, right? And she, Joan Crawford adopted a number of children, and the other children said the whole book was just a lie, that you know this was a get-rich-quick scheme.
A lot of controversy.
And she put it out there. And the people who knew Joan Crawford basically said she was like Mildred Pierce, where she did everything she could for these children. And I guess Christina was a little bit like the Beta character, where it wasn't enough.
Here's a quote from Anne Blythe. Anne Blythe remembered Joan Crawford as the kindest, most helpful human being I've ever worked with. We remained friends for many years after the film. I never knew that other Joan Crawford that people wrote about.
Here you go. Talk about money. After 18 years, Crawford's contract with MGM was terminated by mutual consent on June 29, 1943. In lieu of the last film remaining under her contract, MGM bought her out for $100,000. This is 1943. Wow. She moved to Warner Brothers for $500,000 for a three-movie deal.
Damn.
$500,000 in 1943.
That's a lot of money back then, right?
That is nuts. And so she did Mildred Pierce, even though the studio wanted Betty Davis. And she did, after that, her next film was Humoresque with John Garfield. Then she starred along Van Heflin in The Possessed. And she that was her second Academy Award.
Nomination or award?
And then she
nomination.
Award, nomination. And boy, $500,000.
That was big months, that big money back then.
In 1944, or 40, what did I say, 45, 43. That's crazy. So she was a star. She was really a star.
Wow. Yeah, but think about that now, like $500,000 to do three movies. And now you're paying Robert Downey Jr. like $60 million just to be Iron Man once.
Right. Plus points on the back
end.
Just,
you know, I'm counting the points. It's like crazy. Like, oh yeah, that was a whole lot of money. Well, they're making a whole lot of money still. It's not like they're not
500 grand is worth about $8.4 million today.
And you have maybe three or four women are making $20 million a picture. Probably a handful of other women then would have been in that category to be like, yeah, well, they should have been paid like that because they were the big stars.
Another aspect of this movie, this is a woman who is not completely self-made, but she's...
She is. No, she's totally self-made.
Well, she gets help from our, you know, doofus guy, but...
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, but the actual business, she built it up.
And that's portrayed on screen in America in 1945.
Right.
It seems crazy to think about today. You know, now that's not much of a story, but then it would have been a story.
Speaking of work, going into the trivia. So there's this whole thing here. It says that when Mildred begins working in the downtown restaurant, she makes pies at home for the restaurant. In a kitchen conversation with her maid, Lottie, she says that they have made a dozen peach, a dozen berry, a dozen pumpkin, and a dozen cherry. Now, after a dozen apple, we can quit for the night. That's 60 pies that Mildred and Lottie managed to crank out in one night.
Well, they had a microwave.
Yeah.
Well, they were Mrs. Smith's pies, so they just had to put them in the oven.
That's right.
They were good.
Yeah, that's right. They're just making the inside.
They were good.
Do not discount Mrs. Smith.
No, I just meant they were pre-made. You were just heating them. That's all it was.
That's what it was. That's what it was. 60 pies in a night.
Took them out of the ice box.
That's right. They had the ice box.
You know, one of the best lines, I'm paraphrasing here, is when she was selling the idea of the restaurant, and she said, we have a bar and a restaurant, so people go out, they can eat, and they can have a drink. You don't have to go somewhere else to get the drink. You can get the drink right here.
All together now.
She was an innovator.
So I enjoyed it. I think this was really fun to watch again.
Oh, I'm glad you guys liked it.
I just love that era. I just love those movies. You know, I'll come across them once in a while and flipping around and Pluto TV or someplace, and boom, I'm stuck. I'm sucked into it.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff. I've been checking out some of the older movies. I watched this. I watched Maltese Falcon maybe like 6 or 7 months ago. Oh, it's so good.
Love it.
Humphrey
love
Bogart's it. Fantastic.
Cindy Greenstreet.
Oh, he was tremendous. Peter Lorre.
And
then what else did I check out? Oh, I checked out finally Singing in the Rain, which I never saw. And it was great. It was great. Maybe we'll have to do that one time. Donald O'Connor, man.
And we'll do a dance number for that. Yeah, we'll one do that. Special episode. Yeah. Yeah.
You could do a little soft shoe, right, Mike? Yeah. You still have your tap shoes?
I wear them every day.
Weren't you the the Donald O'Connor of Ryan? Where'd you go, Ryan? Correct.
I was not exactly the Donald O'Connor of Ryan.
No, you were not the Donald O'Connor of Ryan?
Exactly. He was a Ronald O'Connor.
Were you the Debbie Reynolds of Ryan?
Not exactly. I was more like the Donald Trump of Ryan.
Oh, there you go. I still keep a couple dimes to put inside of my little taps.
Yeah, make the little click.
Welcome to Tap Shoes 101 with the Booze Dancing Crew. Well, gentlemen, should we have a one last little taste of this 34-year-old Invergordon?
Well, you could have one more little taste. I drank it all.
Did you finish it?
I drank it all.
You guys are finished with it?
I finished. It was awful good.
Awful good?
Awfully good.
Was it awful or was it good?
It was magically delicious. Is that better?
It was very delicious.
It's magically delicious.
Very delicious.
You're so mean.
I'm not mean. I'm just saying. Semantics, bro.
You're so mean.
Semantics.
You're an anti-Semantic.
Hey, yeah. What are we breaking?
I mean, would you buy a car that said, oh, this has awfully good handling?
I would.
You know, the brakes are awfully
good. If it was pretty, I would.
No, that's true. That's true.
I have problems. So this Invergordon was very good. Very good.
It was.
It was very good.
It was very, very nice.
Our friend Raj at
Glass Revolution.
Glass Revolution. Has got some good stuff coming.
He does.
Always. He does. We need to get Raj back on the show.
We do.
We do.
We do. Okay, this was another good episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We went down memory lane to into the Wayback Machine to the 1940s with Mildred Pierce and a whiskey that's not that old, but pretty old itself. It's 34 years old from 1987.
It's old enough.
If it was a 34-year-old single malt, you'd be like, whoa-ho.
Oh-ho, boy. That's right.
Whoa, hey now. Right. Broke the bank on this one.
This is like Joan Crawford at her finest, right? So any last thoughts, guys?
Go see Mildred Pierce. It's excellent.
Go see Mildred Pierce. I bet you actually play some of those independent theaters around your little
I would love to see this in the theater.
The art houses.
Actually, you know what was cool? When I saw this when I was taking film classes, you know, they had it in a classroom, so they had a pretty big screen. So it was a decent sized screen. It was probably, 100-inch projection screen, on DVD or Laserdisc or whatever we had back then. It was probably videotape because this is like 1989. Yeah, it was probably 1989. So I'm guessing it was videotape. But it was great. It was a lot of fun.
And so was this.
Well, we did it again, boys.
Yes, we did.
One show, one drink. Went to the way, 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 way back machine on our drink and our movie. And we will do it again in the future with two similarly paired media and coiffs.
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 Libations.
Quaffs. Is that like libations. A hairdo? I could use a new coiff.
Libations.
Is that a coiff? Is that the same thing? Is that also like a toupee?
Q-U, not C-O.
Right. Oh, okay. All right, whatever.
All right, boys. We're good for the night.
All right, cheers, boys. I'll run the outro. Outro, and now we go. Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.